Hey, it's time for VoiceOver Body Shop, and we're going to have a great time tonight.
Yes.
Whenever you're listening, because we've got the guys from the Pro Audio Suite, Robert Marshall, Darren Robbo Robertson, and Andrew Peters, and George and these guys talk about high-tech stuff. So, George, you're going to get to introduce them, and then we're going to talk about that, and then we want your questions, because each one of these guys will give us a 20-minute answer.
This and could then, just turn into a two-part show. The Tech Talk is, it might all run into one big giant show.
We'll just edit it
together. I think it will.
Anyway, it turns into an episode of the Pro Audio Suite, we're all in trouble.
Yes.
Okay, well, anyway. This time Robbo won't edit it.
Yeah. Or me.
Are we ready? George, are we ready?
We're ready.
Tame these guys. It's time for VoiceOver Body Shop right now.
VoiceOver Body Shop is brought to you by VoiceOverEssentials.com, the home of Harlan Hogan's signature products. Source Elements, the folks who bring you Source Connect, JMC Demos, when quality matters. VOHeroes.com, become a hero to your clients with award-winning voiceover training. VoiceActorWebsites.com, where your voice actor website shouldn't be a pain in the butt. VoiceOver Extra, your daily resource for voiceover success. And by World Voices, the industry association of freelance voice talent. And now, here's your hosts, Dan and George.
Well, hello there. I'm Dan Leonard.
And I'm George Whittam.
And this is VoiceOver
Body Shop,
or VOBS. Wow. And I have a feeling we're going to have a lot of that tonight.
extra heaping helping.
Absolutely. As they used to say in the Beverly Hillbillies. Anyway, we've got the Pro Audio Suite with us tonight. And this is a podcast that you do on the weeks that we're not doing this.
That's right. We had a little collision this week because of the timing of our having taken off a week for 4th of July. So we slammed us all in together into... because we were all scheduled to be here anyway. So we figured, what the heck? This is a perfect time to have the rest of my other family on the show. And so here they are.
Why don't you introduce them?
All right, great. Well, from way across the pond, representing two of the most well-known, well-famous cities of Australia, we have first Robbo, who's coming in from Sydney. Hey, Robbo.
G'day. How are you? Hey.
Great, man. Thanks for joining us, and it's great to see you. You know, when we do the Pro Audio Suite, it is audio only. We don't even see each other when we produce it, so this is actually kind of disconcerting, a little unsettling.
I had to get out of my pajamas this morning.
And then, I'm glad you put something on then.
Yeah, that's right.
From further down the coast. We have Andrew Peters from the Melbourne area. Hey, Andrew.
How you going, mate?
Yeah. Good to see you.
Oh, he's the voice like a warm cup of coffee. I'll
yes, it's the remnants of COVID, unfortunately. Yes, the COVID cave. I succumbed to it, but I'm out. Yeah, horrid.
It's like so many others. Yeah. And last and completely least, Robert Marshall from Source Elements.
That's right. Like, not necessary is Robert Marshall from Source
Elements. Our pal Robert Marshall from Source Elements. Hello. And he is also a studio owner. And just quickly, we'll get everybody to tell us a little bit, but Robbo is a producer. He produces our show, produces television, radio, audio spots. Andrew is a voice talent, clearly. And Robert does...
all stuff. Sorts of stuff.
Really everything.
The Renaissance man, we call him.
The Renaissance man. Yeah, exactly.
He probably paints as well, knowing Robert.
Actually, I'm very bad at that.
Good. He photocopies himself on that hair. That's the only thing that I think.
When I paint, it ends up just all over my hand. It's really bad.
All right. Don't make me use the gavel.
The
gavel.
Tell us about the gavel. Call it. Do tell.
Yeah. What? No, this is somebody found this in their attic and said, hey, it looks like Dan Leonard. So,
it does look like Dan. It does.
I'm going to see what I can find in my attic that looks like Dan Leonard.
Actually, two things. One, I mentioned the Beverly Hillbillies some episodes back, and everyone sort of like What are you talking about? So I'm glad you actually, obviously a man of my vintage and remembers the Beverly Hillbillies.
Of course.
And secondly, I don't know whether you ever saw, I know they did an American version of a TV show called Till Death Us Do Part. I think it was called All in the Family.
Ah, yes.
I mean, back in the 70s. But the English one starred an actor called Warren Mitchell. He played a character called Alf Garnett. And I have to say, if you Google Alf Garnett, it's Dan Leonard.
All right.
So that's like the Dan Leonard on the shelf thing. Like, don't.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Dan
anyway,
Leonard.
So, guys, if I can get some order in this here, tell us about the Pro Audio Suite. How did you start it, and what goes on? I'm getting a sense of what it's like.
It had a prior life. I know that had a prior life.
We were each guests on your show before. Yeah. Like, which separately, cool. Right? And then we somehow end up all together, and it was like, you put your peanut butter in my chocolate. And like,
that's right.
Well, it was kind of weird because said. I remember we were, Robbo and I did a podcast called the VO Radio Show. And we used to get guests on. And we had George as one guest. We had Robert as another guest. And then it was coming up for a Christmas. And we thought, well, let's do one for Christmas. Why don't we get George and Robert? See, just for something different. And we did. And we did the show, and then afterwards I called Robbo and said, do you know what? That kind of works. I think let's see if they're interested in coming and doing it permanently. So that's a short story of how it happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Robbo.
And it's also the magic of the show, I reckon. The magic of the show is I'm the sort of, well, Robert as well, but sort of I'm more the sort of producer side of things. Robert, while he's also a producer and audio engineer, is also the sort of software techie sort of thing. George, with his obvious skills, and AP, who spends his life in little rooms behind microphones. So, you've got the entire gamut of the industry, though. You know,
both sides of the glass, and like the tech support for both sides of the glass.
Yeah.
Man, that's an important thing. Now, I'm not an audio geek. I mean, from what I understand, you guys get really into detail about stuff and how things are supposed to sound and stuff. I can't define what an audio geek is. How would you guys define it?
Well, I can tell you what it isn't, and that's me. We'll move over to somebody else.
I would disagree with that completely.
Yeah,
really?
Anybody who's spent as much coin in audio gear as you is an audio geek.
Oh, true. Good point. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll accept that. Yeah. But I think the ultimate audio geek on our show would have to be, I would give the award to Robert, for sure.
Me? Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
I agree.
Yeah.
Hey, Robert,
there is no question he can't answer pretty well.
Robbo, eat your mic a little more, gang you up. I want to hear you louder. If you
am I falling away in the background there? How's that?
Yeah,
that
we don't want you to get stepped on. Andrew's tromping all over you. There we go.
Well, he always does that anyway.
But that's what I do anyway. I've always done that.
There's something about Robbo's mic right now that, like, no matter how close he gets to it, he doesn't sound like he's super close to it.
I'm kind of hearing that too, to be honest with you. But see, that's the NTG for you.
Just like bash the front of it. Just go like,
that's live.
That's me. That's me. Yep.
That's his
this thing working? 35 years as an audio engineer. Is this thing working? Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, that's right. Didn't you used to love that? You know, please don't touch it.
Yeah.
But, let me toss this out there and see what comes out the other end.
It's going to be a very dangerous.
Interesting.
BS is what will come out the other end.
And that's why we're VOBS. Each one of you, tell me what you think are the keys to good audio for voiceover specifically, and then you can talk about all the other weird crap that you guys talk about.
For me, for voiceover, it needs to sound real. It needs to sound natural. Greatest respect, doing radio imaging for 35 years now, and the greatest respect to all the radio imagers out there. But I hear a lot of radio imagers who produce podcasts and stuff like that, which is a more natural form of audio and obviously very voice driven. And they use the same tricks and effects that they use on voices on radio promos. So they compress the living hell out of it. They EQ the living hell out of it. And to me, that's not natural. To me, on a radio promo, absolutely, you need to do that. There's a million reasons we could sit here forever and talk about why. But for a podcast, it's just people sitting having a chat. I want it to sound natural. I want it to sound easy to listen to. I want it to sound as unaffected as I can. And to me, that's the trick. That's the biggest trick.
Yeah, we were just talking about
because this, the radio promo is designed to interrupt and get your attention, and correct. That's fine, but you don't want an hour of that. Essentially,
that would be fatiguing.
Yeah, yeah. Can you imagine a documentary sounding like that?
Yes.
Well, I'm looking at an elephant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Robert, you're listening to that stuff all day because you're producing it. It must be fatiguing. You must have to be careful not to run your cans too hot or your monitors too hot.
You're fluctuating the level, and what's funny with listening and mixing for TV a lot is that, especially for advertising, there's a lot of time spent just on the small speakers. So there's not a lot of volume there. It's still like very in your face. It depends on exactly what spot you're working on. And I'm not working on like car dealership spots all day. But I've certainly done a number of campaigns where it is just like borderline yelling at people.
What are you monitoring through, Robbo?
What am I monitoring through?
When you're editing and mixing and doing all that post.
I've got my, can you see them up the back there?
Yeah.
I can.
My beautiful Adam Audio A7Xs, which I purchased just last year, in fact, and I have fallen in love with. And also my Austrian Audio, I was going to say A7X, and now the name of them's gone out of my head.
High X65s,
thank you.
Yeah, no worries, mate.
But Andrew's not a geek.
they've become my bees. I've never mixed in headphones until I had them. We talked about this on an episode of the show recently. I put them on the first time and I hated them. I took them straight off, and now they're my go-to before anything gets mixed out of Pro Tools. Throw them on and have a listen in that as well.
Right. And as a producer, of course, you're working with multiple tracks, and you're really taking the stuff that, you know, any voice actor is going to send you, and you're adding all of the other elements. And I think a lot of people think, well, do I have to do that as a voice actor? And no, you're the guy that's going to be doing all the hard work. So what do you want when a voice actor sends you a file? What do you expect from them?
Oh, anybody who listens to our show can answer this.
Oh, yeah. deal with the room first. First thing is not an echoey room. First thing. Yeah. And then basically a decent type of mic, probably a condenser, but a high quality dynamic, and make sure you're in front of the stupid mic close. And I'd say that's the beginning of it. And then after that, it gets into the equipment. But honestly, these days, a lot of this equipment is all good. And the price range for a $100 USB interface and the quality it gives is not as different as you'd think for the difference between that and $1,000 interface, for example. So it's pretty inexcusable these days to have crappy gear, I think.
Yeah. It's not like telling people, it's like, there's no microphone out there that's going to make you perform better. You know, you either got
Is that true though? Is that true though, Dan? I think there's a psychological thing. I think if you go into a studio and someone puts a cheap mic in front of you, it's kind of like, is that what I'm worth? Well, and if they put up a really, a really good mic, you go, thanks, buddy. I mean, I've been into studios where the guys run in, taken down a shotgun and put up, his U87 because he wants me to be on the U87. I know it's because it's going to sound better anyway with my voice as opposed to the mic he had in there before, which could have been for somebody else. Right. But psychologically, thanks.
It could be a placebo effect.
You thought about me and my voice and what might fit it well.
Yeah, correct.
A placebo effect is still an effect, right? Even if it's not something that's affecting the quality or the product or your acting, it's something
I think the opposite can happen. For example, Sage was working on a song forever, and she, I just had her set up with like an M-Box and an old Mac Pro, 1.1 Mac Pro, and a Audio Technica battery powered condenser. It was not awesome at all. And
she gave her like really basic entry level mediocre equipment to start with.
She was just writing a song, and it was like, she's recording in our living room. The refrigerator's right there, like buzzing away. It wasn't expected to be a good recording.
You're slipping, Robert. She should be on a train because that's what you would normally do.
Yeah, you're right. She's really actually upping the quality. I have to, she does these vocals on basically the scratch part of this song, like the scratch track. And for the next 3 months, she's chasing that. She's like, she likes that performance better, and she redid it like four times at least. Because it's like, there's a certain relaxing, like, oh, shitty mic, who cares? I'm just going to kind of do this. And you end up not worrying about it so much that you end up doing a really kick-ass take. Then when you try to think about it too much, you end up breaking it.
Yeah. Robbo?
I was going to throw it back to you two, to you, Dan, and you, Andrew, because there's a thing as an audio producer slash engineer slash mixer is your brain is wired that when things are louder, your brain will tell you they sound better, even if they don't.
Mm-hmm. True. So,
it's like so it's when, like salt.
Audio salt.
So I guess the reverse question that you posed us, Dan and Andrew, would be when you're recording, are you conscious of how loud your headphones are? Do you notice a difference if you're monitoring lower as you are when you've got them loud? I mean, AP's deaf anyway. He probably didn't even hear me ask that question, but maybe Dan did.
Well, when I'm recording, unless I'm doing a remote session, I'm not wearing headphones. I listen to myself in the environment in which I'm recording, and that way I'm not affected by it at all. And I find it weird wearing headphones for this, but because of the way the audio is set up here on StreamYard, I gotta wear the headphones. But normally I just listen to myself as I am, the way I normally hear myself. Sure. And you know, there's people that say, well, I've got to hear the mouth clicks, and I got to hear this, and I gotta I'm like.
Well, it's like George's client who practically needs a foot pedal for his headphone volume.
Yes, that's right.
We won't
right.
mention any names.
Yeah. Right. No. Just
sorry, David K.
Yeah.
Not mentioning any names.
No. He's a friend of his. You meet a friend of David K. Yeah.
And it's like and definitely like some announcers depending on the style that you're, you know, working in. If you're aware of your mic technique and where you are, then you need the headphones to really kind of feel that feedback if you're playing with the proximity effect.
Yeah.
I know that when you're recording singers, often it helps to really compress their voice for them in their headphones so that they just kind of hear themselves.
It's all in their face.
Yeah. So they have a different feed, a headphone feed and
yeah.
which right, is separate. Yeah. Yeah. See, I can work without headphones, but I prefer not to. Because I find it like if I'm going to wear headphones some of the time, then I'm going to wear headphones all the time. Because if I keep changing things, then I get confused as to what, you know, what it's sounding like or whatever. So headphones, 100% for me.
Hey, what do you use?
What do you think? Would be
from
Vienna. The AAs.
No, I got the Austrian Audios. I have. HiX 55s in the booth because they're closed back, and then I have 65s out here if I just want to check an edit for whatever reason. I rarely use headphones for an edit. If I can't hear it through speakers, then I don't worry too much. And for things like this, I've just got some Audio Technica in-ears, which I've got to say are great. They're fantastic.
Especially for like eliminating echo, it's a good trick when if you have like those stick it way in your earplugs.
Well, the good thing is if you're out of the studio, you're traveling and you're recording in a hotel room or, you know, wherever, it's actually really good to have in-ears because it just cancels anything that's bleeding
noise
in
out.
Via the, yeah.
So I should use that next time I'm on a train.
Yeah, you would frighten yourself because we know exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us here on Voice Over Body Shop, you're probably very confused. But
not as confused as we are, Dan.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's spreading around. Our guests are the guys from the Pro Audio Suite. George, you're technically not a guest. I mean, these are you guys.
George, what are you? You're confused now.
Yeah.
I'm totally confused.
Split personality.
I was still wondering about 5 minutes ago, are we doing the podcast right now? Because I keep reminding myself, we edit the podcast. We don't edit this show.
There's no razor blades.
I'm trying very hard. So if you haven't noticed.
There are razor blades, less Dan, not for editing.
Yes. Anyway, if any of you out there who are watching this very show at this very moment, if you have a question for these guys who know
please
audio,
save us.
Yes. Throw it in the chat room. And I know Jeff Holman is hiding in there somewhere, and we will get to those questions in our next segment. But we've got Robert Marshall and Robbo and Andrew Peters who are joining us from the Pro Audio Suite. And again, you got a question, they'll be happy to answer them. Okay, so getting back to that sort of subject about, you know, good equipment and stuff like that. I mean, mm-hmm. I generally teach and preach.
Yep.
Keeping it super duper simple.
Yes.
And that it's not going to be everything you do on the back end to make yourself sound like you, as I like to say. You know, the idea of a home voiceover studio specifically is not to make you sound great. It's to make you sound like you, as you exist in the environment in which you're recording. And as you said earlier on, Robert, it's like the environment means more than anything else. And, you know, no echo, no exterior noise, those sorts of things. What about some of the, you know, a lot of people use, you know, somebody was like, hey, I need help with my RX9. It won't install right. And I'm like, why are you using that? Well, mouth clicks and I've got this and I've got that. Well, to me, everything is physical. What do you guys think about all of this modern, you know, filtering software that we have now?
It's going to start.
Yeah, I don't use it.
Good.
Yeah.
All right, next question.
No, Robbo. I know Robbo uses it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I don't use it. I'm just saying don't, like, let the end person mixing it deal with that. And and there's no need to, like, start trying to process and hide stuff that will be figured out anyways.
Yeah. I think I can see where you're going, Dan. And I think the answer that you're probably looking for and the one that we give on the show a lot is really make your room sound as good as you can. You know, find the right room, talk to guys like George, get yourself set up somewhere where it's going to be the best possible recording you can make. And then as much as possible, just leave it alone. Guys like me and Robert, we've got your back. We'll clean you up. You know, obviously we're not going to send audio to our clients. It's not right. And look, you know, back in analog days, and even the days before home studios, we dealt with voiceover artists who had mouth clicks and all the rest of it. It's just a part of recording. So you know, as long as you're not popping and, you know, hissing and someone's mowing the lawn next door, just leave it. Leave it alone and send it to us and let us deal with it.
We've talked about it. At the most, a high pass filter. Maybe if it's set very low. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
30 or 50 at the most.
Actually, that's really interesting you said about analog though, Robbo, because I'm just thinking in the days when we were recording on tape. And the edit was done with a splice block and a China giraffe or whatever you call it, you know. Mm-hmm. What did you do about mouth clicks and things? How did you cut them out? I can't remember because I was never in production.
Cutting out mouth clicks.
We had a compressor that was like a super fast high frequency compressor, and it was originally made for taking out pops in vinyl, essentially.
Okay.
But honestly, the thing like probably the worst plugins you can think of now, it's like it kind of helped, and if you used it too much, it just made the whole situation worse. And
yeah,
you know, it's like it could take out the really big stuff, but I mean, now we're chasing down little like little tiny things that aren't even like spikes above the waveform.
I mean, that seems to be an issue with a lot of people. Like, as I was saying, somebody's like, I got to use RX9 because I take out all this stuff. But when we talk to each other over a cup of coffee in our kitchen or something, it's all there. And the only reason that we hear it is because we're, of course, talking a little bit more in proximity to a microphone as opposed to being across a table where you're doing that. But generally, I don't know. I hear people, they don't do mouth clicks. It's only when they're doing it in voiceover for some reason. And because I tend to think that people overproject. They tend to overemphasize certain syllables, and that happens. Actual vocal technique is far more important than all the other things. As long as you've got the right environment and you're using your microphone right and your levels are right, it really shouldn't matter unless you're really.
I mean, I think that people are clicking away even when they're talking amongst each other. So it's just that you're in a room and there's background noise and you're 6 feet away from them and all that. So you're not picking up on the mouth clicks but I think someone and people have clicky days and not clicky days. It depends on what you ate and how much you drank. And it's like, if you were how much you drank the night before too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a theory too. Well, stress is a part of it. But Robert and you guys that have recorded actors in legit studio, you know, commercial studios, do you guys record the actors with the microphone this close?
No way.
Traditionally, like in the traditional sense.
If you're in a good booth, you have the freedom to be more away from the microphone and still have a very direct sound, and then you get a more balanced kind of frequency. It's not so bassy. It's a little bit like you can almost have the same effect by just staying just as close to the mic and putting it in omni, and then you would have less proximity, and it sounds more natural depending on the booth that they have. But a lot of the trick is you get so close to it to avoid your room.
Everybody with voiceover booths that are working in closets and all those little wood boxes we all know so well.
Yeah.
They're forced to have to almost eat the mic because mm-hmm. they're getting so much room resonance.
And it's slowly skewing. Against.
And
it's slowly skewing the aesthetic.
And the closer the mic is, the more the mic is now sensitive to the mouth noise. The mouth mm-hmm. noise may always be there,
right.
But the closer the mouth noise is the same volume, no matter how loud or soft you project, right? It's mechanical. So it's like a harpsichord. You can't change the volume of that damn thing. That's the sound, the volume it is, because it's plucking strings, you know? It's like with the mouth noise, it's just mechanical. So now when you're closer to the mic, guess what gets louder? The mouth noise, you know? And that's the challenge. Like, it's harder to record a clean, great-sounding voiceover in a really small room with a really close mic. It is harder.
Yep.
It's interesting because you're talking about like having a conversation in the kitchen, having over coffee, you don't hear clicks and you don't hear anything. It's like walking into a room that's echoey. You don't necessarily, unless it's like a medieval church, you don't hear the echo. But as soon as you record something, put headphones on, you hear it. It's there.
Well, your brain, there's a bizarre thing that happens with your brain.
That's right.
When it's live, your brain is interpreting and it sees it and it cancels certain things out. It's like the other thing that your brain can do amazingly well is if you're standing in a circle of four people and it's a party with 100 people behind you, right? You can hear all four people and what's being mm-hmm. said. And then you just take a recording of that pretty much where you were and you play the recording back. And then you can't figure out what the four people are saying as much. The background noise seems way louder, and your brain, because you're not seeing the mouth move, there's a million things that just make your brain use filters.
They actually do that for hearing tests now. Go ahead, Robbo.
There's a very embarrassing thing that I'm sure every audio engineer who's ever walked to the planet will tell you that they've done, is you'll sit there for 20 minutes EQing a voice or compressing a voice or adding a reverb, playing with a reverb.
I know what you're going to say.
My God, that's awesome. And then you'll look up and it's bypassed.
Yeah. You weren't doing shit the whole... It's like you fell for your own producer's knob. It's like the knob on the desk. You're like, can you like do something with that? And you like turn a knob that's not connected to anything. You're like, oh, much better. You're like, yeah.
That's right.
Like, dumbass.
Your brain will be telling you, my God, that's getting so much better. Your brain is your biggest enemy when this audio.
The entire hi-fi stereo market has based its entire economy on that, basically.
Yeah.
About.
Yeah.
Audiophile market?
Yeah, the audiophile market, exactly.
Yes.
Paint your CDs green. Oh, I definitely hear that. Like
$1,000 power cables. I can sell you one of those.
Yes. Exactly.
Speaker cables with electrons that follow traffic directions.
Well, once again, we're talking with the guys from the Pro Audio Suite. If you have a question for them, because, I mean, I got lots of questions. I could talk all night, which I've been known to do. But if you've got a question, throw it in the chat room, whether you're watching on Facebook or you're watching on YouTube, because we do the show live, because we want you guys talking to us and letting us know what's on your mind and what you need to make your voiceover practice better, especially from an audio point of view. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll be right back with the guys from the Pro Audio Suite right after these incredibly important messages. Don't go away.
This is the Latin lover narrator from Jane the Virgin, Anthony Mendez, and you're enjoying Dan and George on The Voiceover Body Shop.
Well, hello there. I bet you weren't expecting to hear some big-voiced announcer guy on your new orientation training for Snapchat, were you?
This is Virgin Radio.
Well, okay, we're not that innocent.
There's jeans for wearing and there's jeans for working. Dickies, because I ain't here to look pretty.
She's a champion of progressive values, a leader for California, and a voice for America.
It's smart. It's a phone. It's a smartphone. But it's so much more. It's a, the files are ready. Don't forget to pick up the eggs. What time is hockey practice? Check out this song.
It's the end of the road for Rick.
It's just you and me, Rick.
When hope is lost.
The i8 from BMW. Who said saving the planet couldn't be stylish?
Hey, it's J. Michael Collins. Bet you think I'm going to try and sell you a demo now, huh? I think they speak for themselves. But I will give you my email. It's jmichael@jmcvoiceover.com. Now, if Dan will stop waxing his mustache for a minute, we'll get back to the show.
Inflated prices? Not at voiceoveressentials.com. Despite the nationwide inflation rate of over 8%, VoiceOver Essentials refuses to raise prices. In fact, they refuse to even say the I word. Their inventory is large on all their products, and they purchase them before the current economic conditions. It's simply wrong to increase profit, as many retailers are doing right now. So Harlan & Company promised not to raise their prices during difficult times for everyone. They'll stay the course, steady and sure, flat and firm, solid and steadfast. Okay, enough. You get the point. Unfortunately, they're under the same inflationary pressures as everyone else, and they'll need to restock in the not-so-distant future. No doubt, there'll be sticker shock for them and you. So, right now is the time to order that Portabooth Pro or VO1A voiceover microphone and their VO 2.0 headphones. Fight inflation at voiceoveressentials.com.
Hey there, I'm David H. Lawrence, the 17th, and with my company VO Heroes and my team of coaches and my community of voiceover talent, we guide voiceover actors along their journey. And you may be watching VOBS here and not nearly as far along as many of the other people who are watching. You may not even have started yet. And we actually specialize in helping you do just that. So if you're watching all the stuff going on here on VOBS and going, I have no idea what they're talking about. I don't know, but I really want to do this. I'd really like to help you. Please go to voheroes.com/start. That's voheroes.com/start. And you can take our Getting Started in VoiceOver class, which tells you everything you need to get started as a voice talent. And I'd love to hold your hand along the way and help you with that journey. Again, voheroes.com/start. That's voheroes.com/start.
This is Bill Ratner, and you're enjoying VoiceOver Body Shop with Dan Leonard and George Whittam. VOBS.TV.
Hey, we're back here at VoiceOver Body Shop. We're with the Pro Audio Suite. And again, if you've got a question, if these guys know the answer, whether it's the right one or not, we'll have to decide later on. But if you've got a question, throw it in the chat room, whether you're on Facebook Live or watching us on YouTube or watching the smoke signals come over the top of the hill. Anyway, just put them in there and we can get those questions to these guys. I have one question I wanted to throw you guys, because this is something that comes up an awful lot. When I'm talking to my clients and helping them with their audio, they're all like, I want to sound warm.
What Put on a coat.
That's usually what I tell them. You know.
Yes.
Sometimes they're like, what do I do about the bird sounds outside? I said, a shotgun.
You've been to Italy, haven't you?
Anyway, when somebody says warm, and we know that everybody hears differently and certain sounds are, you know, people say, I have a buzz, and you listen, no, it's a hum. And I'm like, they'll say, I have a hum. No, it's a buzz. What do people mean by warm, and is that something that people should achieve?
Do you want me to have a crack at this one?
You've got the warmest voice here. It doesn't sound like you have to work too hard at it.
Well, I think the key is, apart from the frog in the throat, excuse me.
Ribbit.
I think, exactly. Excuse me. COVID. I think the warmth thing is either you've got it or you haven't, I think. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but each voice has its own signature, and some sound warmer than other voices, I guess, but if you've got the prerequisite to have a warm voice, stop projecting so much and cuddle into the microphone and get warm.
What does having a warm sounding voice mean?
I don't know.
It's another one of those, you know, could mean anything sort of.
It implies a certain softness, but still size, like big and soft, I would say. Yeah. But it's bizarre when we start using these words like for audio, because they're all like touchy-feely words. But
have you ever had the one with the colors? I mean, I haven't heard it for a while, but used to go like, just think kind of brown. Can you think brown?
I've never heard, like make it sound more purple is like the joke.
Yeah, a little more blue than purple. I've heard that before.
Yeah.
I mean, bright and dark, that makes sense. You know, if you're up the scale, down the scale is all it is. I mean, it doesn't have to be bright and dark, but.
No.
Do you have to take your Pantone colors with you? And it's like, shade?
Well, it's funny because you're talking about Pantone colors, but really it's like all these different words. They, you know, essy and edgy and boomy, and they all have different kind of spots in the frequency range generally that people agree on. And
it's
probably pretty wide. But certain words you would definitely at least agree are like, say, 1K and below. And those would be like boomy and muffy or whatever.
It sounds like a Pro Audio Suite episode waiting to happen where we literally
this is where we
sit and talk for 45 minutes about how to define...
Shit no one cares about.
Except us.
Well, that's the show, though. That's the show.
Clearly, people do care about it because I keep hearing it. I want to sound this way. I want to sound that way. I'm like, well, you sound the way you are.
I think that's right. I think you've got to deal with your voice is what your voice is. You know, like how many times I hear voiceover artists making their own voiceover demos or something like that, and they obviously decide that they want to sound a bit more warm or a bit more thick or whatever term you want to put on it. And all they do is they grab, you know, something down around 100, 150 hertz, and they just wind the hell out of it and just put all this bottom end that's not really there into their voice and stuff like that. And it's just, it's coming back to what we were talking about before, it's not natural.
No.
It's not normally there. Don't try and make it there. Your voice is your voice.
Unfortunately,
you're stuck with it. Yeah.
What you start with, if it's music or voiceover, it's like, how do I sound this way or that way? It's like, well, sound that way. That's the first thing. All the EQ, like, it's all meant for subtle, very refined changes. And if you're using it for extreme stuff, then you're fixing something or trying to force it into a place that it doesn't want to be. Mm-hmm. But ideally, you know, like, you're doing this with your voice. You are projecting in a certain way. You're talking softly, and that's all part of the sound of it. And that's immediately where warm or dark or whatever comes from to start with. And then,
I think a good example is Nancy Cartwright. You know, you think about her like she couldn't play Bart if she sounded like Andrew.
Oh no!
It'd be a different kind of Bart.
She can just do that mid-rangey thing. I don't know.
it's just your voice is your voice, and yes, you can push your voice to different places, but you can still only push it to places that it's able to go.
Right.
You know, it's
like accents to me. I always find that interesting. I mean, I know that Matt Kaurick is very good at accents. In fact, he's just a freak in that department. But sometimes, you know, people say, well, why don't you do an American voiceover and stuff like that? It's like, why would I? How many other voiceovers are there? There's so many. Why would I compete? It's ridiculous. Yeah,
right.
So,
Can I ask you a question? Have you got your top button done up?
I just noticed.
That's very formal of you. I mean,
it's a polo shirt. It's very English of me.
Would it be legit for a voiceover
a throwback to my sort of skinhead days or something?
Shall we go for some gin and polo?
Just don't ask Prince Andrew, for God's sake. Otherwise, you'll be bags of M&Ms.
We got some questions from our vast worldwide audience, and we're wondering if you guys want to
George
will answer the first question. I've been rehearsing this part all night.
Yeah,
I reckon you should do it. Dan, you should actually just pull a question up. Don't look at it. and just pick a name of any of us, and it will probably be the wrong question just, for that person.
Print it, write it backwards, and then stick it on your forehead. And then we'll answer the question, and then you'll have to guess what the question was.
That's right.
Oh, my God, this That's is turning into our like show.
Yeah. Yes, sorry.
All right, George gets the first question, and he can address it to whoever he wishes.
The first one in the audience from Rob Ryder, who's on YouTube watching, from Cincinnati. I've been told that the normal noise floor in a quiet home is about minus 70 dB. If a booth has a noise floor of minus 60 dB or better, why do we need room tone at all, like for audiobooks? How about, Robert, you take this one.
Oh, God. I'm lost. basically,
pay attention.
If the noise floor of a house is lower than your booth, why do you need room tone for it? I mean, I would call it booth tone. You just, because it's, if you're cutting everything and you edit like between one word and another word, you're going to hear the silence, and your brain, whoever the listener is, will feel the absence of whatever it is in the background. So you want to bridge that across with your edits. Even if you're cutting out breaths, you might even just want some silence there, because if not, you'll feel that complete cliff down. Anybody on headphones will especially notice this stuff, because then it's not blending with whatever room tone is existing with the speakers that they're listening in already. So if you're on headphones, it's like now you're fighting against zero. There's no place to hide. You can hear your edits. Put some booth tone or some room tone in between things, and it just makes life way easier. If not, you have to have such an incredibly clean setup that it's really hard to achieve, and you have to make no noises if you're move, you know, like in between words, if you somehow move your arm and there's a sound and you have to get out of it again, you're going to hear these things be cut in and out, sound gated and whatnot. So
yeah, I mean, a normal noise floor in a quiet room minus 70 dB. I don't know where that spec comes from.
That's
Robin.
If you're living in a bunker.
It's probably, I mean, if you have a quiet home in an urban suburban or whatever environment, you could probably get that low. The problem is a lot of us are in urban environments and we never get close to that level of a room tone in a quiet home. And then people go inside a booth thinking it's going to be quieter, and it might be all the way down to 150 hertz quieter, but from 150 or below, it sometimes is louder because that room is a resonating chamber, and now it makes everything louder in those lower frequencies. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're all fighting against different battles in terms of room tone noise levels.
Yeah. And the other thing also to remember is, you know, it absolutely, when the audio is raw, you're probably not going to notice it so much, but once you start processing, once you start EQing and compressing and all that sort of stuff, you actually are bringing that noise up a touch, so it does become more noticeable. And
a compressor will just bring all your edits out.
And you know, unless you sort of, you know, go in and do a whole bunch of heap of noise reduction stuff, your brain will pick up as Robert's saying.
Yeah, it certainly will pick up silence. Yeah.
Yeah, you do want something just to fill those gaps. So
I've actually got a file sitting there when I edit, which is actually just the noise of the booth, which I've captured. Yeah. And I just cut a piece, and when I have to take something out, like a breath or whatever, I just drop it in. That's how I do it.
It's bizarre, not to take this into a Pro Audio Suite thing, but adding noise, in a sense, adds resolution to things, which is what's called dither, but the easiest way to explain it is it gives a nice infinity for your voice to go, or whatever it is that you're listening to, for it to fade away into. So you can't tell when it went away. And if you don't have that, then it's a lot harder to give a sense of depth. A lot of
voiceover artists would also probably be horrified to know that one of the first things you reach for when you're processing voices these days is a bit of distortion.
Yes, that's right.
Just to give it a bit of crack and crunch and pop. Yep. So, you know, it does have its place.
Now, here's a question. Also, when you if you've got your mic set, like if you've got a multi-pattern microphone, depending on what pattern you select, when you cut at the end of a word, I know this, it's, you get a click. What pattern is that? We talked about this only a couple of weeks ago.
Any pattern that lets more low end through, basically, because that click is going to mainly come from leaving a waveform. The low end tends to be more susceptible to the cut happening when it's way at the bottom of the, you know, like the waveform moving up and down relative to zero. And so if you cut there on the bottom, and the worst case scenario is the next instant is a cut on the top, physically there's no way sound instantly jumps up like that and you get a click. So okay. Something that has a lot of low end. But I remember that I used to, you know, in our booth at a studio I worked at, we had a CRT TV, and one of the engineers just didn't care that that thing was on, like kicking out like 14K constantly. And he just didn't hear it, didn't care about it, whatever. But the funny thing is, like, you'd scrub down, you know, like, and then that super high frequency noise would come down into like some other audio frequency, and it would just be maddening when you're editing, because it'd be like, you'd go into scrub, you'd be like, and you'd hear it constantly because it's like this 14K signal being pitch shifted as you scrub.
Yeah. Wow. We got a question here from Linda Graves, who says, and this is one I ask all the time because it's like, why are you doing this? What does a $1,000 interface like a Universal Apollo Twin Duo give you that the $150 to $200 interfaces do, aside from the fact that you can use all those plugins?
You have less dollars to worry about.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, that's right.
The Apollo's got a pretty decent preamp, and so some of those like $100, $150, they're going to have a preamp that doesn't quite give you as, like, they might go up to, a good example is like a Rode AI-1. It only goes up to like 50 decibels of boost. And so maybe if you're really soft-spoken or doing some ASMR or something, you could use the extra gain before the mic preamp gets noisy. There's a hell of a lot of internal routing and other capabilities that the Apollo has for dealing with latency. But in the end, if all you need is a mic in and a headphone out and you're trying to look for simplicity, the most the Apollo offers you, I think, is a good mic preamp and a good headphone preamp.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually like the SSL 2, which is the interface that I use.
A lot of people like that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been hearing that.
Well, it's got plenty of gain. That was the thing, because Robert and I were doing, we're actually shooting a video for Source Elements, as it was. And I was using the AI-1, and my daughter was doing the voice, and it just didn't have enough gain for what we were trying achieve. I mean, it was cranked, but we got through it, but it wasn't ideal. And so Robert and I afterwards started talking about getting another interface with more gain, and we scoured around and found the SSL-2. So I bought one, and that I think that's got about 60...
65 or 60.
60, yeah, 62, yeah. 65, whatever it is, yeah.
The Rode, I think, has like 45, I think. And I think some of the other like less expensive interfaces are like 50 and 55. The Rode was honestly especially low. It's not bad. It doesn't, but the Rode doesn't seem to go into like crazy noise. Some of them that go up to whatever, 80 and 60 or whatever, when they do get up there, they're just kicking a lot of noise anyway, so it's kind of a useless range.
Yeah. Yeah, and interesting that Rode would put that out with only 50 dB of gain, because the Rodes generally are somewhat lower output. But
I think the reason they did it with that, because it was a kit, and then it came with the, you could buy
the condenser.
Kit,
the as it came with the NT1.
Yeah. And the NT1 has a huge amount of gain. It's incredibly quiet. So I think as a pair with the AI-1 and the NT1, it worked really well. It's when you start sticking other things.
You put a dynamic mic on that, like put an SM7 with the AI-1 and you're in pain.
You're in trouble. Yeah.
George, you got Jeff Holman's question.
I'll do that. I just wanted to, there was a follow-up from Rob. He's like, oh, I'm sorry I got some of the stuff backwards. I actually meant that the noise level in my house is actually louder than the noise level in my booth. And I think it's a semantical thing. He's asking about room tone again. And room tone is just a generic term for the sound of an open microphone in a space, right?
Without you talking,
right. Yeah. So every room has a different room tone because it's unique to that space. That's what we're really referring to. So, yeah, your booth might have a higher, should have a lower, your booth should have a lower room tone than your house.
You would hope.
Otherwise you wasted a lot of money.
If it doesn't, you're in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. So that's definitely true. Jeff Holman asks, he's our very own chat room mod, What's your feeling on using pre-processing to audio requested to be audio without processing? Like sending in an audition with high pass filter activated on your Revelator when you're not doing post-processing technically. So yeah, we've talked about this.
I don't call a high pass filter. I'll pass that one off as not processing. You're allowed to use a high pass filter as long as it's not too high. Everything else, don't touch it, I think.
Yeah. I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago. For me it comes down to do what you have to do, but do it for a reason. So have a result in mind. Don't blindly reach for a high pass filter, you know, if you don't know what it's going to do or why you need it. Leave it alone. If there's nothing sonically that strikes you that makes you go, you know, this could be a little odd, don't do it.
How about this for an answer? If you have a problem that you know about, you have two choices, and that is to just let the other engineer deal with it, or you try to get rid of it. And the whole question is, can you get rid of it better than the engineer? Can you get rid of it without tying their hands in any way that they might go, you know what, I just didn't care about that noise at all. I didn't care at all. And now this processing has done something. It's cut the end of a breath off if it's a gate or something. It does something weird that maybe for some reason is needed. But if you're absolutely sure that you can solve the problem for the engineer, you are doing them a favor. You're saving them time. Great. The problem is that's not guaranteed to be what they want. And so the other aspect I would say is, if you can do something with your voice that you cannot stand someone not doing for you, if you don't trust them, like just the opposite, if you don't trust the engineer to, you know, tweak it up and give a little bit of a brighter EQ and compress it a little bit, whatever, if you're not sure they're going to do that and you can't stand the possibility of your voice going out without that, then sure, do your stuff. And the weird thing is the awkward conversation you have to have with the engineer and whoever it is, it's not really that awkward, but like, do you want processing or not? Do you like it like this or like that? Be really quick at being able to turn the stuff off. If you're probably doing a session with me, I'm going to like turn it off. But there might be engineers out there that do prefer it, or they do want to work quick. Or classically, you're recording with, say, direct to a client, and they're editing your voice straight in a video editor, and you just know that they're never going to give it to an audio person and they're just going to spit it out of the video machine, then you might want to get ahead of the game and try to process your voice for those things. But you have to be confident in the processing you're doing, and then you have to be willing to have the conversation with somebody to say, hey, I'm doing this, do you want it or not? Or you can just not do it. No one expects you to do it anyways, and done.
I think that there's the only issue I can see with that, though, is that we all have this weird perception of what we sound like. And I guarantee if, you know, like a voice talent decides they're going to process their voice, they're going to make it sound like something they want it to sound like, not what it should sound like.
Yeah.
And that's an issue that, you know, once it's baked, you can't unbake it. So
correct.
That's right.
My advice, I would say, don't touch
it. You can never go wrong with not touching it.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, if your room is fun, like we talked about before, if your booth is good, you know, and the everything that comes out of there sounds natural, as we've talked about, you know, sonically fine, then even if they do stick it in there raw, it's not perfect. But you kind of go, well, you know, it's better than me butchering it or whatever, you know. So just leave it.
I think that's the thing. And I really don't want to sound arrogant here, but interestingly,
too late.
Yes, Robbo. I know exactly what an asshole that Robbo is.
It's typical your
Aussie, head up his ass. I would suggest to you that, you know, I guess, you know, given 35 years here, Robert, however many years behind the console, an audio engineer is going to know what they want to do with your bad audio better than you. You know what I mean? And or they're going to want to do it their own way. They're going to go, well, you know, I don't like this, so I'm going to process this way. But if you give it to them and you've already had a hack at it, what you do is you push them into a corner of what they're able to do to get the result they want.
So yeah, especially with compression and gating, you can barely undo that stuff, if at all.
That's right.
Like,
totally.
But how many guys, like Robbo, how many times have you listened to other audio engineers, and we're not going to name names, but you hear what they do, and it's like, that sounds like crap. What are they doing? Well, I mean, yeah, that's the point, though. They don't think it sounds like crap. You think it sounds like crap. You know.
That's right. And they may listen to my stuff and go, well, that's rubbish too. And that's more personal. But you know, at least it's as an audio engineer, they've been given the opportunity to make it crap if that's how they want it to sound, if that's the sound they want to make it sound. It hasn't been, you know, it's not taken away at the beginning of the process because you've overcompressed your voice or you've gated so hard, you've cut stuff off, and now all of a sudden I'm pushed into this corner where I've got to spend 45 minutes to an hour doing what I can to fix it for a still not perfect result.
I mean, like a situation like this, you're doing an ensemble record, or it's supposed to be all this stuff recorded sort of in a group, and one person gives you this super highly compressed thing which doesn't sound very room-like and conversational. So now you're like, great, I gotta, to make everyone sound similar, I gotta make them all sound like they're super compressed.
That's right.
And then you're like, well, okay, it works, and probably most people don't notice, but you're thinking as an engineer, like, man, if I had it differently, I would have treated these voices like that, and it really would have sounded like they were all in a room. And you're just like, well, I had to take it in a different direction because one person went there. Now I have to take everything there, for example.
Gentlemen, we've reached the end of this particular hour, but you're going to stick around, and we're going to do Tech Talk for next week, and if anybody's got a question for you that they are like, what are these guys talking about? We can get into that in our next hour. But anyway, guys, thanks for being with us tonight. It's a pleasure to meet all of you. I mean, I know most of you guys, but it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to meet you guys, too. I haven't seen any of you.
You know what some of these guys look like. Anyway, George and I will be back to wrap things up right after this.
Beautiful.
You're still watching VOBS?
In these modern times, every business needs a website. When you need a website for your voice acting business, there's only one place to go. Like the name says, voiceactorwebsites.com. Their experience in this niche webmaster market gives them the ability to quickly and easily get you from concept to live online in a much shorter time. When you contact voiceactorwebsites.com, their team of experts and designers really get to know you and what your needs are. They work with you to highlight what you do. Then they create an easily navigable website for your potential clients to get the big picture of who you are and how your voice is the one for them. Plus, voiceactorwebsites.com has other great resources like their practice script library and other resources to help your voiceover career flourish. Don't try it yourself. Go with the pros. Voiceactorwebsites.com, where your VO website shouldn't be a pain in the you-know-what.
It's time, yes it is, to do something I've never had to do before, and that is do a commercial for Source Elements in front of the co-founder of Source Connect and Source Elements, Robert Marshall. I don't know if he knows this, but I make it up every single time, and I do it twice a session, and here we go. Source Connect is an amazing tool for connecting your studio to others in the world of production, and it's loved by so many producers for a couple reasons. One, it's been around a long time to a point where it's been, I will say safely, it's become a standard, right? It's become a standard staple of voiceover recording production because it's been around a long time. Maybe later, when we get into Tech Talk later, Robert can go a little bit more into Source Elements history and when Source Connect was developed, but it's been a while. It's been a minute, as the kids say. So it's a well-established tool. It also, the producers are recording your audio directly into their timeline in whatever DAW they're using, 95% of the time, probably Pro Tools. And so it works in the workflow. It just flows into the way the producers work and allows a very efficient way of working. It also allows them to have a client or clients, and many times with big commercials, there's many clients, all listening in, either physically sitting in a studio or all dialed in from another system, and they're all listening to what you're doing in real time, giving notes, giving direction, listening to approval, and all of this is happening real time because your audio goes right into the track. That is the key, and that's why it's such a hugely popular tool, and why as a voice actor, you probably should be, at the very least, highly familiar with it, if not owning a license. And if you want to do that, go to sourceelements.com. They have a brand new website, by the way, too. Go check it out. Get familiar and get yourself a trial license so you can start learning how to use it. And you'll find out very quickly whether your studio is ready for Source Connect when you start testing it. We can help you if you're not, so don't worry about that. Dan and I and the team at Source Elements as well will love to give you a little bit of advice to get your studio up to par. But anyway, there you go. Thank you, Source Elements. Thank you, Robert. And thank you, Rebecca, for sponsoring us for so long. We really appreciate it. And let's get back to the rest of the show right after this.
Yeah. Hi, this is Carlos Ellis Rocky, the voice of Rocco, and you're watching VoiceOver Body Shop.
And we're back, and we're going to rack it up for Tech Talk. We're going to have the Pro Audio Suite guys with us. Should make your tech update rather interesting. See what they think about some of the weird stuff that you find. Anyway, next week on this very show, we will have Tech Talk number 82. Believe it or don't, it just goes on and on. There's just so much to talk about.
Tech never stops.
It just becomes the next tech. Anyway, let's see here. We have our donors of the week, like Jonathan Grant.
Oh, my gosh. Christopher Epperson.
Sarah Borges.
Philip Sapir.
Tom Pinto.
Shelley Avellino.
George Whittam Sr.
That's right. Brian Page.
Patty Gibbons.
Rob Ryder.
Greg Thomas.
A Doctor Voice.
Antland Productions, A. Uncle Roy.
Shauna Pennington Baird.
Martha Kahn.
Don Griffith,
Trey Mosley,
Dana Birdsall,
and Sandra Manweller. If you want to make a donation to the show to keep the amazing technical quality that we have achieved over the last 11 years, if you go to our homepage, vobs.tv, there's a button that says donate now. You can give us a buck. You can give us a buck a month. You can give us 10 bucks a month. You can be like some people who give us 500 bucks a month.
Well done.
Yeah, thank you. I thought that would be worth it. Anyway, that's important. Also, you can join our mailing list there, and you'll get an update of what we're going to be doing this week, so you know that you have to tune in to catch that stuff. We also need to thank our sponsors, like Harlan Hogan's VoiceOver Essentials.
VoiceOver Extra.
Source Elements.
VOHeroes.com.
VoiceActorWebsites.com.
JMC Demos and
WorldVoices.org, the industry association of freelance voice talent. Yes, welcome. I'm the president, but I'm also a member.
And I got to slip in my little promotion. It's amazing how many people don't use this coupon code. You guys are crazy. Leaving money on 20% off any service at georgethe.tech. That's a booked service, scheduled service, or a webinar. If you use VOBS Fan 2022, yeah, 20% off.
All right. Very good. We need to thank Jeff Holman for doing a great job in the chat room, getting those questions in there, but he's not done yet. We still got to do Tech Talk. And of course, Sue Merlino for coming home in hot weather, riding her bike back from the airport and doing the amazing stuff that she does as our technical director. So we thank her for that. And of course, Lee Penny, just for being Lee Penny. Anyway, that's going to do it for this show, and we're going to re-rack it for Tech Talk. If you got questions, put them in the chat room. Anyway, you know, this isn't an easy business. There's so much you got to know, but as long as your audio sounds good.
It is good.
I'm Dan Leonard.
And I'm George Whittam.
And this is VoiceOver.
Body Shop.
Or VOBS. See you in a bit.